Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Monday, August 17th, and I hope you had a good weekend. My dad was at a party this weekend, and I guess they were talking about Social Security. If you know my dad, this is very much up his alley. He loves talking about investments, as do a lot of other dads. And something that came up was that one of the dads was about to start collecting Social Security, and he was talking about how much it was, and they started getting into the fact that had he just invested his money, he could have made a lot more. My dad started going down the rabbit hole of Social Security and texted me to do a Higher IQ episode on it, so here I am. And in order to help with the episode, he started doing some math. He texted me that if you took $1,000 a month, invested it at 8% interest compounded quarterly for 30 years, you'd end up with about $1.5 million, which could pay you $6,000 a month in retirement and still leave the $1.5 million as inheritance for your kids. He then compared that to Social Security, where a similar contribution over the same period doesn't even pay you $3,000 a month and leaves zero capital behind when you die. His conclusion was that the government must quietly be using the money. And his math isn't wrong. The investment returns really do dwarf Social Security payouts. But when I looked into Social Security and why it exists in the first place and how it works, the comparison breaks down in a way that I think is worth understanding. Because Social Security was never designed to be an investment. It was actually designed as insurance. And when you start thinking about it that way, it really changes the whole conversation. All right, let's get into this one. In 1934, during the Great Depression, over 50% of elderly Americans lived in poverty. There was no federal safety net for people who couldn't work anymore. If you didn't have savings, or if the bank that held your savings had collapsed, which happened to thousands of banks in the early 1930s, or if your family couldn't take care of you, you were on your own. Old age poorhouses were common, essentially institutions where destitute elderly people lived in grim conditions because they had nowhere else to go. Really sad. President Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act on August 14, 1935, and when he did, he said something that I think reframes the whole program well. He said, "We can never insure 100% of the population against 100% of the hazards of life, but we have tried to frame a law which will give some measure of protection to the average citizen against poverty-ridden old age." President Roosevelt didn't promise wealth. He didn't promise returns. He promised a floor. A minimum level of income that would keep elderly Americans from starving. And the program has delivered on that promise more effectively than almost any other government program in history. The poverty rate among Americans over 65 has dropped from over 50% to about 10%. And the Social Security is the primary reason why. So, hey, hats off to them on that. Today, roughly 70 million Americans receive Social Security benefits. 9 out of 10 people over the age of 65 get a check every month. For about a third of elderly Americans, Social Security represents over 90% of their total income. Think about that, 90% of their total income. It's actually the largest single program in the federal budget, accounting for about one-fifth of all federal spending. And for millions of Americans, it's the only thing standing between them and poverty. Now, there's one thing we should clarify about what Social Security is not. The biggest misconception about Social Security is that your contributions are sitting in an account somewhere with your name on it, growing over time and waiting for you to retire. They are not. Please remember that. They are absolutely not. Social Security is a pay-as-you-go system, which means that the money coming out of your paycheck right now is going directly to someone who's already retired. Your contributions are not being invested on your behalf. They're being paid out to current beneficiaries this month. And when you retire, the workers at that point in their lives will fund your benefits with their paychecks. Assuming people 30 years from now actually have jobs and AI didn't already take them. Just kidding. Right now, workers and employers each pay 6.2% of wages into Social Security for a combined 12.4% on income up to about $168,600. If you're self-employed, you pay the full 12.4% yourself. The average monthly benefit for a retired worker is about $1,900, and the maximum benefit if you retire at 70 is about $4,900. If you start collecting as early as 62 years of age at a reduced rate, full retirement is 67. And if you wait until 70, you get about 8% more per year. That's the benefit of waiting. Which is why most financial advisors say delay as long as you can afford to. Even if you've never worked, you can collect up to 50% of your spouse's benefit. though unlike an investment account, you can't pass Social Security to your kids when you die, which is exactly my dad's point about not being able to leave any of that behind. And most people don't realize that Social Security income is taxable. Up to 85% of your benefits can be taxed depending on your other income. Those numbers are adjusted for inflation annually, which is something that the stock market doesn't guarantee. My dad's math assumes 8% consistent annual returns for 30 straight years. The S&P 500 has historically averaged about 10% annually before inflation, so 8% isn't unreasonable as a long-term average. But average hides a lot of pain. The market dropped over 50% during the 2008 financial crisis. It dropped 34% in 3 weeks during COVID. If you needed to withdraw money during either of those periods, or if you panicked and sold, which I know a lot of people who did, your 30-year average could be dramatically lower than 8%. The average investor significantly underperforms the market because of bad timing, emotional decisions, and the inability to stay invested during crashes. And study after study has confirmed this. Here's the benefit of Social Security. It doesn't care about market timing. It pays the same amount every single month, regardless of what stocks did that day, which is what insurance does. It removes variability in exchange for a lower expected return. So now let's get to the point that all my younger listeners are very curious about, which is, will there be anything when we retire? The answer is almost certainly yes, but most likely at a reduced level unless Congress acts. The Social Security Trust Fund, which holds the surplus that's accumulated over decades of payroll tax collections exceeding benefit payouts, is projected to be depleted around 2033 to 2035. When you hear Social Security is running out of money, that's what people are referring to. But depletion of the trust fund doesn't mean that Social Security stops. It means the program can only pay out what it collects in real time from current workers' payroll taxes, which would be enough to cover about 77 to 79% of scheduled benefits. So, benefits would be reduced but not eliminated, and the program itself would continue to function because workers would still be paying into it. Alright, now let's put on our solutions hat, because Congress has a few options to close the gap. They could raise the payroll tax rate, raise or eliminate the income cap so that high earners pay Social Security tax on more of their income. They could gradually increase the retirement age, which I think they tried to do this in France and it did not go well. They could also just reduce the benefits for higher income retirees, or some combination of all of these. They've known about this problem for decades and have chosen not to fix it yet because every solution involves either raising taxes or cutting benefits, both of which are politically painful. That's another thing I hate about politics. All the politicians do what's in their best interest to get more votes, not actually what's good for the future. So that's just a tough pill for all of us to swallow. But let's keep going. One other detail worth knowing here is that undocumented immigrants contribute an estimated $13 billion per year in payroll taxes to a system that they're never eligible to collect from, which actually helps keep the fund solvent longer than it would otherwise. It's also good to understand that the Social Security program at this point is just too large and too important to let default. Almost every economist and political analyst expects Congress to patch it before the trust fund actually runs out of money, because letting 70 million Americans take a 20% pay cut is not something that any politician wants to be responsible for. Now, to my dad's point that you'd be better off investing the money yourself, that is mathematically correct for someone with the discipline to invest consistently for 30 years. Someone who never panic sells, never raids the account for an emergency, and retires during a period when the market isn't crashing. Well, that person exists, but Dad, most Americans are not that person. About 55% of American adults own stocks, and the median retirement savings for households approaching retirement is around $134,000, which would generate maybe $500 a month in income. Social Security's $1,900 on average monthly benefit is 3 or 4 times what most people have managed to save on their own, which is why the program exists in the first place. Not because the government thinks that they can invest it better than us, but because most people don't invest at all, and without a mandatory floor, millions of them would retire into poverty the way that they did before 1935. Alright, now let's close this one out. My dad's math makes Social Security look like a bad deal, and for a disciplined investor, it is. But Social Security was never trying to compete with the stock market. It was trying to make sure that a 75-year-old who didn't invest or whose investments got wiped out, or who got sick and spent everything on medical bills, doesn't end up in a poorhouse. Before it existed, more than half of elderly Americans lived in poverty. Now, just about 10% do. And that's what insurance looks like when it works. So just remember that Social Security is not for you if you're a good investor. It's really about the community, about helping everyone else next door, your neighbor, your friends, the people who are not as financially savvy as you are. Stay informed, stay curious, stay invested in the market, and we'll see you tomorrow.